Some of you may not be old enough to remember. Some of you remember very well. You might even still listen to that music. If I said the word or name Elvis Presley, would that bring any memories? Elvis Presley was so well known indeed, and he had a song, the main phrase of which was, "All Shook Up." Do you remember that? Maybe you don't remember the song, but you remember the hits. All Shook Up. But you know what shook him up? Anybody know what shook him up in that song, what the theme of the song is? You see, you remember they all shook up, and you remember why he's all shook up? Because of love, exactly. He's smitten in love. His hands don't work, nothing seems to work because he's all shook up. I like that. All shook up. See, the Spirit of God, when we look both at the reading in John and in Acts, has shaken the people. They're all shook up. But we would do an injustice to that same power of the Spirit if we thought for one instant that it was only back then. We hear again and again that the testimony of the gospel, the testimony of the church down through the ages, is that in every day and generation, the Spirit of God is trying to shake up the church and shake up the world. Sometimes the church is so stuck that the world gets shaken to shake the church. This past weekend, even going on right now in Montreal, is the Montreal and Ottawa Conference, which is the regional division of our church, of the United Church, is having a conference. And I was there for Friday and Saturday, but came back last evening. And the theme speaker was talking, who is a researcher in the United Church, who's looking at what's called the Echo Generation. They're the children of the baby boomers, some 7 million. Many of whom, most of whom, if we look around, we will see many are not here. They are not entering places of worship, whether it be synagogue or church or mosque or temple. They're those that are primarily the ones that are saying of themselves that we are spiritual but not religious. It is not that there is not an appetite for the transcendental. It's not that there's not an appetite for the enchantment that is not bequeathed to this world and society by a pure secular view. They are longing to have some engagement with their spiritual life. It's just that the church doesn't cut it for them. That the religious institution oftentimes is just too stuck in the mud to accommodate some of the questions, the doubts, and the nonconformity that is part of that generation. Does it mean that we as a church must throw our hands up and say, well, you know what, we just have to find better ways to get them in here? The challenge, I believe, for us as a church is, as the Spirit comes and moves upon us, is not only to revitalize our gathered life together, but to re-enchant our imagination for how we can be responsive to people where they are. I thought, as I was preparing this week and knowing that the race weekend was going on, maybe some of the more fit from us should just be sent out from this church right now and join the race and run alongside people and just be an encouraging force. Say, we come from Parkdale, we're just cheering you on to the end. That might seem outrageous, right? Could it be that we need to think in divergent ways of how we as a community of faith can speak authentically and lovingly into the lives of people who are questing, or who may not even know they're questing but need to be encouraged to recognize the quest that is resident in them? My contention and my conviction is that all of us made in the image of God have a disposition to plumb the depths of the holy. We may not have the language, we may not have the capacity or even the imagination to do so, but given an opportunity to unleash that creative hunger and that groping, I believe that people will find something. We have a good news. We have story to tell. Now, I'm biased. I happen to believe that it's the best story in town. But it's not our story. It's God's story, meant to be shared and embodied and inculcated in our lives and then sent out and shared generously, not judgmentally. So what happens is that here, gathered in Jerusalem, as Jesus instructed his disciples to wait for the Spirit, this Spirit that's going to lead them into truth and lead them in the paths of righteousness, they're waiting for the falling upon their hearts and their lives of this particular Spirit to enable them to do something new. I don't think we appreciate how radical this undertaking has come about. The reason, and you have to pay attention particularly in Luke, because Luke goes at long ends in order to recognize the diversity of peoples in the world. More than any other gospel, in Luke we find out the ethnicities and the disposition of people. Just by mentioning certain terms, Luke, remember, wrote Luke and Acts. If I mentioned a few weeks ago, we had the Peter engaging, and it's unfortunate that he's known by this moniker, but a eunuch. Where was the eunuch from? Ethiopia. Where was, and again, the story in Luke, the one who helped the robber that fell among thieves, where was that person from? Samaria. You look at Luke's stories and he tells you, he locates them because in his vision he understood that the gospel was intended to flow out through the disciples who were Jewish out into the Gentile world. And so what Luke is writing here in Acts is not pure history, it's theology. He's demonstrating that the power has come into the Jewish community in order that it may go forth and challenge the ways of division between Jew and Gentile and to break those down, because the gospel is intended for all. It is also transspatial. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. What we know about Luke here, and he's tricky, and you know, this is something fairly new that I have discovered, because I've kind of passed over like most people do, and even most scholars. But this year, I wanted to try and dig down and to see if there was something different. And I went back and I looked at some of the historical peoples that are listed there. Do you know what I discovered? In that list, the Parthians, the Medes, the Elamites, that Charlene read, the whole list of people, there are 12 nations there. The Medes and the Parthians had been extinct for 500 years by the time of Jesus' coming. They were a peoples who had already ceased to be. They used to be in ancient times, but they were no more. They died out. So how is it that there are God-fearing or devout Jews living already in Jerusalem who are, makes reference, are Medes and Parthians? It's not a historical call primarily. Of course, its history is woven into there. But what he is saying is that the gospel that has come through the power of the Spirit is intended to move in all directions. It is so powerful, it moves presently, in the future, and it's even gone back to the past. All are imagined in the gospel, the good news of God. That's what Luke's trying to say. And why is it, how we know, he goes on to talk about the fact that as they speak in the languages of those who have gathered from varieties of places, who hear in their own language, what is it that they're speaking? They are speaking about the mighty acts of God. In other words, the things that God has been about from the very beginning. So they're bearing testimony across time, across epochs, across culture, across ethnicity. Every barrier is broken down by the power of the Spirit to communicate the gospel that flows all over the place. Isn't that incredible? Luke is making a theological statement that this power, this Spirit, will not countenance any barrier. And this is a wake-up call for the community of faith that calls itself the church, and for anyone. If we believe that it is all up to us, or if we believe that some of the ways in which we practice our life as a church community are absolutely immovable and our customs cannot be changed, this story bears witness that God will find a way around it, through it, break it, in order that the gospel be made known. Because it is good news. And this good news includes not only spiritual transformation, renewed relationships, the breaking down of prejudices and racisms and barriers across class. Because that's what happens to the early Christian community. They started to be disparaged by the Roman society and others in the elite communities because they broke down the barriers of those in elite and those in slave or servant quarters. They gathered together to worship, and they didn't care what people were from. They gathered around the name of Jesus Christ. This spirit is doing crazy things. This spirit gets us all shook up. And if we as a community of faith resist some of the changes and the challenges that are upon us, God will find a way through the Spirit to make it happen. It does us well to join God. Don't you agree? Don't you agree? It does us well to join what God is doing. One other thing that I wanted to mention, then I wanted to draw some very practical examples about what we might be encouraged to as a congregation to be about on this Pentecost Sunday. The other thing that we have to remember, and I don't think it is an accident, that this is on Pentecost. Pentecost is not a particularly Christian tradition, as it were, a festival has become such, but it was a Jewish holiday. It was the 50 days after Passover, Shavuot. And it was intended to remind the people, one, of the giving of the law, but also we remember that on that 50th time back in Leviticus, that the community was instructed on how they were to live ethically and justly. In other words, they were to practice not only the Sabbathing of the week, but the Sabbathing of the land. They were told that as they harvested their agricultural holdings, as it were, that they were not to harvest to the end of the fields. They were to leave them free for the poor and the alien. They were to recognize that everyone should have access to the bounty of God's provision. They were not to shake their olive trees bare when they were harvesting them. Leave some for those who are poor and the alien, strangers. So the question of ethical and just living and communal covenant was a part of the Pentecost celebration. It is not an accident that the Spirit comes to remind the people of the mighty acts of God, which includes the absolute commitment to the just rendering of the world. So part of the way in which we get all shook up is that we must intend in our life, in our ministry, in our work, to ensure that all have enough. That our eyes and our perspective and purview is looking out for those areas that are blocked by injustice and other kinds of barriers in order that the Spirit may help us surmount them. There's a lot that we can learn, I believe, from where the Spirit is moving. And sometimes we as a church community, not necessarily literally Parkdale, but the church community is hard of hearing. And so other forms of expression of communal life and even industry are used to teach us a lesson. Last week I was attending the Festival of Homiletics in Atlanta. David Loos is the preaching professor at Luther Seminary, and he was giving a lecture, and I spoke with him after because he made reference and has written about lessons that we as a church can learn from corporations or from other practices. Do you know that Starbucks has a position in its upper leadership as a chief evangelist? Did you know that? Did you know that Apple Store has a chief evangelist and marketing strategist? They've borrowed that word from the church. We are all skittish about the word evangelism, and here are companies who are recognizing that there is good news about their particular product as they understand it, and they are unashamedly and unabashedly willing to tell people and convince them to buy it. Now, we have to ask ourselves, come on, let's claim that word back. That's our word. To be engaged and celebratory of the story that we have because it is good news. It is good news for the liberation of people. So I asked him if I could borrow some of his insights from a particular store and industry that he thinks can teach the church something. And I'll just share a few of these with you. He said there are 10, actually, but I'm not going to use all 10. It's Guy Kawasaki, who was chief evangelist for the Apple store. And he has a friend who's written a book called The Apple Experience, Secrets to Building Insanely Great Customer Loyalty. And I've shared with you before about how Apple, Steve Jobs and Apple, actually transformed the marketing world in a way. They have the most successful retail product, as it were, and experience. I don't want to go into all of the details, but they generate an average of $5,600 per square foot, attracting more than 20,000 visitors a week. And their stores, and there's a particular psychology behind it. And this chief evangelist about looking at completely transforming the way industry works rethought the whole thing. And here are some of the insights. Number one, stop selling stuff. The mentality of Apple is not to sell stuff. The first commitment is not selling more stuff, not worrying about those things, but how do we enrich people's lives and the customer's experience when they come? We're not going to be concerned primarily about selling more stuff. Obviously, that will come. But we're concerned about the experience. And when we look at our own church practice, as it were, the church equivalent, David Lowe makes reference here, is that we have to engage people when they come and ask, why have you come? How can we help you in your spiritual journey and the questing? For whatever reason you have come, how can we address that and learn and hear from you? We don't want when as soon as you come here, join up, be a member. Now, we have members joining today, but that took a while. That took a little time. But we don't want to hit people with that. We want to find out why have they come. Start where they are. The second thing they do is enrich lives. They have a credo in their wallet size. All of the Apple workers are giving this little credo. And one of them begins with enrich the life of the person. When they come, they want to make sure that they have a positive experience. So they have playrooms for children. They meet people where they are. They talk with you in ways, not primarily about, but they talk about your day, they talk about what your goals are, what you're hoping for when you leave the store, all of those kinds of things. And so we as a congregation, we have a vision in the sense we have worship, we have outreach, we have all kinds of faith formation and things like that. We have a story to tell. And we have to ask ourselves, how does what we do help enrich after having found out what people are looking for? What is it that they are seeking? And how can we demonstrate and offer to them in ways that are authentic to our story that which will meet them where they are? One of the other things they do is celebrate diversity. If you go into an Apple store, you notice the people working there. They are from all walks of life. Tattoos. Earrings, mohawk, doesn't matter. What they're looking for people who have good people skills. And they recognize that somehow their sales staff must represent and reflect the diversity of the people who will come to the store. Similarly, we are enriched at this congregation with people from diverse backgrounds. And when people come and when we seek to celebrate and know what it is that people are doing, the Spirit of God enables us to use that diversity. Notice the story. Look well at the story. God's Spirit does not render uniformity. The people heard the gospel of the mighty acts of God in what? One language? Their own language. There was no requirement to change your culture and change your language and conform. The gospel goes and speaks into the reality of that person. That is the seriousness with which God takes who we are and how we have been made in the image of God. The attempt to make everyone fit a mold is not the interest of the Spirit. It is to speak the acts of God, the gospel, into people in their diverse situations in life, celebrating that diversity and rejoicing. The other is, as I mentioned before about the chief evangelist, sell the benefit. What's the benefit of coming to this experience? This is something that we've been trying to do in our Unbinding the Gospel, and we will be doing in Unbinding Your Heart. What is the benefit of our story? What difference does it make what we do and how we do it? Why are we here as a church? I want to share a story that has really touched me, and it continues. As you know, we look back there and we had a fire 3 weeks ago. The aftermath of that has humbled me. I shared with the council meeting this past week. Soon after the fire, there were people on the street, neighbors on the street, and phone calls and emails flooding in to my office and my inbox,
people expressing their regret and wanting to make sure everybody's okay and so forth, and phone calls, is there anything we can do? And I was speaking with one member, a representative of the community, and was talking about, you know, can we help you? Your church means so much to this community, this neighborhood. We want to do something. We as a community want to help. And I said, well, you know, we have our stewards who are our trustees looking after things. We have an insurance policy. And I happened to mention that, as I found out from Ken, that we had a $5,000 deductible we had to come up with as a church. It's about $41,000 worth of damage that has taken place. And immediately this person said, are you serious? We want to help. With your permission, can I use my networks, tweeting and blogging and everything, to put out the word to let people know that we should be able to help you out? As a result of that, there are merchants in the neighborhood collecting money with jars on their places of business. People are walking in off the street, bringing checks and offering money and making contributions. And what I'm hearing as I walk the neighborhood is that you may not realize I don't attend your church, but what you do in the last 10 years, you have transformed this community. You have been alongside people that other people have ignored. You have come to the rescue of community initiatives that have been long dead in the water. You have made a difference. You, Parkdale, you mean something up to us. You matter to us. And I was humbled by that. We have a story to tell. Those offerings from people have provided an opportunity for us to talk about why we do what we do. And wouldn't it be something if we could multiply that benefit in the congregation where we all are excited about the story and the mighty works of God, and the Spirit gives us the courage and the stamina to speak to people because we are impacting the lives of people we are not even aware of. And if we could do so intentionally and to invite people to help us learn how better to minister and how better to understand the story of God, we would be enriched as a congregation. Don't you agree? This is good news. Good news indeed. The last thing is creating multi-sensory experiences, and how appropriate as we have done so today. One of the things in the Apple stores that happens is that when you walk in, there's the screens and so forth are positioned slightly beyond a 90-degree angle. It forces you to touch the computer in order to adjust it. So they get people participating, touching. Sometimes we have opportunities to reach out and touch one another. Today we had the children and the others' dance movement and so forth. Multisensory, because we are made fully in the image of God, and all that we have is meant to be offered up to God. So the children helped us to wiggle and dance with our feet and praise with our hands and smile with our lips. Get your body into it. May the Spirit of God remind us that we are called upon to bear witness to the story of the mighty acts of God. We are to be innovative and creative with the imagination God has already imbued us with. We have a story that is rich and is intended to be shared, generously impacting others, intentionally calling people to faith, and having them challenge us about the stuck-in-the-mud ways in which we find ourselves. But most of all, may the Spirit of God fall on each one of us, so that love that pours out from God will render us what? All shook up. Thanks be to God.